Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology here on Cranberry.fm. It is the 18th of May, 2017. And the world woke up to bad news this morning. In my eyes, indisposed, in disguises no one knows. It's been a rough morning for people of a certain age. Chris Cornell, one of the founders of Seattle's hard-rocking, punk-inspired grunge sound, was reported dead at age 52. Now, I knew Chris nearly 10,000 years ago when I was a young drifter and peace activist in Seattle's University District. He and his band Soundgarden played benefit concerts for the Seattle Coalition for Peace in the Middle East, and I'm pretty sure he played at Peaceworks Park more than one occasion. If you were in Seattle in 1990 or 91 and ever spent time at the last exit in Brooklyn, you'd remember Chris' company quite well. He's going to be dearly missed by those who knew him and by millions of loyal and loving fans around the world. From Soundgarden to Audioslave to Temple of the Dog, Cornell's sound was the background soundtrack to many of our now middle-aged lives. Rest in peace, friend. Thank you for being a hero musician. Okay, friends, welcome to Webcology. I'm Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, and Dave's not here. Dave Davies is on his second, maybe third honeymoon. Him and wife Mary are in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. So anyone listening in the Puerto Vallarta region, order a drink to Dave's room. He won't notice for hours. Joining in the guest co-host seat is Christine Schackinger from the Vetters and Sites Without Walls. Christine, you are a hero. Thank you so much for volunteering to co-host at last second.
You got my name right.
I know, eh?
It's amazing.
We're trying to be professionals on the show, 10 years in, and we're trying to do it right. So I got the name right, Schackinger. I sat here and pronounced it to myself for a good half hour before the show because you know how erotic I get. You know what, Christine? It's a good thing. I'm so glad you were there when I messaged you and asked you to come on, because some of the stuff that went down this week, a lot of the stuff that went down this week is specifically stuff that you've been interested in researching. I would consider you one of our specialists in, especially the topic of cybersecurity.
Why? Thank you.
Well, it was one of those weeks for cybersecurity, eh? Like a pretty bad one.
pretty bad one, yeah.
WannaCrypt, shortened to WannaCry virus, ransomware. Actually, it wasn't a virus. It was a straight out attack of through ransomware spread around the world, primarily in Europe. It was stopped before it got across the ocean, for the most part. Christine, could you give us a quick rundown on what happened?
Well, they got some tools from our government.
NSA hack, yeah.
Yes, from an NSA hack from the shadow brokers that allowed them to use an exploit in Windows. Windows 7 and above was already patched if you've been running your patches. But older versions like XP and Vista, which are still used in other parts of the world in great quantities. It was allowed to use a hole in there in something called the SMB, and that enabled it to rapidly fire across entire networks. And in fact, I believe at the last count was something like 350,000 computers in just a few days.
Now, 350,000 mightn't sound like a lot of computers, relatively speaking, but some of these computers were, the servers that run hospitals, Britain's National Health Service. I understand France's health service got shut down. Like, these 350,000 computers, some of them were actually heavy hitters, right?
Right. And actually, I heard an interview with the National Health System in Britain, and they were pretty crippled because things like surgeries couldn't happen because they couldn't get the films or the background on the patient, and they were kind of stuck in the water for hours while they tried to pull up print records, which they also keep a copy of, but that's not on location and not easy to get to.
And of course, with typical British resolve, they decided not to pay the hackers and just told the dying people to stay alive if they didn't mind.
Well, actually, it is recommended that you don't pay the hackers because people do pay the hackers. They keep doing this.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you can't pay terrorists. I mean, that's right. Just hard, sometimes very hard to let an awful thing happen. But we can't encourage terrorists by acquiescing to their demands, right?
Right. And that's hard to say. If it's your system and you don't have it backed up and you're about to lose everything, really hard to tell someone not to pay. But the problem is also once you pay, you may or may not get your files back and they may ask for more money. So yeah. It's not a straightforward honor among thieves kind of concept.
Well, so. And it's funny, in your answer just a second ago, you said one of the most critical and important yet simple things: system backed up.
Yeah, if your system was backed up to date or up in the cloud somewhere where you had a backup, you could just shut down your computer, wipe everything, and then have it reloaded, and then it would all be okay. Because the ransomware encrypts everything, and you're getting basically a key to unencrypt it. So it's not that your system has like this virus they can't remove, right? So if they wipe it all clean. If you were on Mac or Linux, you didn't have this problem. This was just purely a Windows problem. But a funny thing is, the Bitcoin people,
yeah,
they wanted people to pay with. Well, people on Windows XP and Vista aren't probably as tech savvy. And so they had to set up, no lie, a help desk to get people to pay them.
Oh, my goodness.
Because they didn't know how to do Bitcoin.
I understand. I was listening to Kevin Metnick, one of the original hackers, talking about this this attack and saying that they weren't very sophisticated. Do you know anything about the investigation into trying to figure out who these guys are?
The only thing I've heard so far is it has the signatures of North Korea. Some of the similar code that they found from other North Korean hacks were found in this code. Okay. That doesn't necessarily mean it's North Korea. These are types of attacks are much harder to pin down than, say, like someone just intrudes into like Sony because there are footprints that are left behind there. But right now they're thinking that it's probably North Korean hackers.
Okay. The way this attack was stopped was actually kind of cool and really simple. Okay. What was it? Like a 21-year-old kid in the south of England who was works for a North American security company, but was just sort of screwing around in his bedroom when he saw the attack happen. And, you know, spent 3 days trying to figure out how to stop it.
Yeah, I thought it was, he accidentally ran across that they hard-coded the website that it goes to into the system, which normally you wouldn't do. It'd be dynamically generated or something. But not only that, they didn't buy the domain name.
Okay, and I understand once the attack is sent back to the domain it originated from, it's designed to stop, right?
I don't remember the very specific on how the domain was in, why the domain was in there, so I'd have to go look that detail up. But they didn't buy the domain name, so he bought the domain name that was in there.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like a fail-safe. It was like a, you know, hey, if we want to stop this, we can stop it. But they forgot to buy the domain to stop it. So he bought the domain name, and then he used that domain name to stop it. Now, of course, they can change the domain and resend it out there, but it did stop the spread long enough for the word to get out and for it to not become so infectious.
Okay, now, there's a couple important takeaways from this. Number one, back up your files, and it doesn't matter if you're on Windows, Mac, Linux, whatever. You were protected. If you were protected this time. Like, it wasn't going to get you this time, but you don't know next time. You know,
it's a common myth that Macs and don't get attacked. They do.
Yeah, this time you're absolutely right. The people who were using Macs or using Linux were perfectly safe, eh? But next time, we don't know, right?
Right, exactly. Next time it could be a Mac that gets hit.
So, friends, you know, back your stuff up. Just like back stuff up. I used to suggest people back up their systems weekly, and that's in my business. We had to back up everything on our hard drives weekly. And, you know, as of last week, that became daily.
Yeah, and if you're a business, like a healthcare business, or, you know, a business with sensitive data, there are protections out there now that will stop most of these ransomware attacks. And what they do is they sit on your perimeter, and when it tries to go call back to their network, which it has to do to start the encryption, because it has to get the key, it will block that from occurring. So if you are somebody who has important or sensitive data, like at a healthcare system or a medical company or a server company, any of those kind of things, you want to look into one of those solutions. They're not perfect, but they're pretty good.
Oh, and if you are one of those solutions, you might want to get a couple Crackerjack marketers on your side really fast, because today is the day you should be making bank.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they don't market very well.
Today's the day you really should be making, like, the fortune you retire on, because everybody wants you right now.
Exactly. Everybody wants you. Sorry.
No worries. A little bit Billy Squire there. Moving along, another thing that I'd say that you're, you know, high knowledge, perhaps even an expert knowledge on, is you know, the regulations around how the net is, regulated. Earlier today, the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, voted 2-1, straight on down partisan lines, to open debate on, basically undoing net neutrality rules that the Obama administration put in place over the last couple of years. So we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks, saying it's coming. Write your congressman, write the FCC, write your senator, write whoever you can write. Do something about it. Well, it's here. It's a terrifying thing. Christine, the audience has heard me over and over and over again talk about the importance of net neutrality and why net neutrality is important. You know, I'm sure I bored them to tears on it. In a quick paragraph, could you try to explain to you why is net neutrality important?
Well, first of all, I first learned about it years ago when you and Dave did a debate on it at SES, I think it was.
2008.
Yeah.
I was just looking at the photos a few minutes ago.
Were you? I took those photos.
You did?
Yeah, I did. So net neutrality basically allows us to have everyone's always about free markets, right? Net neutrality allows the internet to be a free market. Everybody's treated the same. All data's treated the same. You can put up a little mom and pop site, and heck, you can go after and compete against the Walmart if you want to on selling TV sets or something, right?
But it's been done.
Yeah, exactly. But if this goes through, there's several things. One, they could break up your internet like they break up your cable. So you'd have to pay for tiers and premium, and you might have a social package and, you know, a Wikipedia package and a search engine package, or however they want to break it up. Then they can also slow down access for sites. So like the Netflix would have to pay more to be able to deliver content. Mm-hmm. And they could also block sites like Netflix. So if Comcast decides that it has a product it wants to compete with Netflix on, they could just say no more Netflix. All Comcast subscribers can no longer get Netflix. You're going to use ours. So what's that?
Or just to sort of bring this home to Cranberry Radio listeners, let's say one of the ISPs, maybe Comcast, owned a whole whack load of radio stations.
Right.
And, right. You know, they're a little bit threatened by podcasts and internet radio, and they decide to slow our signal down to where our show just doesn't make sense at all.
Exactly. They could do that. Yeah, because then you'd have to pay more for access to actually deliver your content at proper speeds. So it's a really devastating bill. And the only thing it does is way, way, way back in the day when they needed them to build out the first mile.
Yeah.
Yeah, from the backbone of the internet the government created to users, is they needed these companies to do it. And they gave them exclusive arrangements and huge tax breaks with the idea and the guarantee, supposedly, that when the infrastructure needed to be updated years later, they would do that. They decided when that time came, they would not do that. They would now try to undo net neutrality and earn more money so we can pay for the upgrades that they obligated themselves to do on their dime, not our backs. So it's even it's kind of a little despicable thing on their part, is that the only reason they exist is they got these breaks and they got these exclusivity agreements. That's why there's monopolies in so many areas of the country. And yet now they want the consumer to pay for them to do these upgrades. And yet they're making in profit billions of dollars a quarter. And now they'll say small ISPs can't compete in this environment. Well, that may or may not be true, depending on which ISP you're talking about. But not many of us have access to small ISPs. We're beholden to one or two big ones in our area because those monopolies were set up originally so that they could build out that last mile.
Yeah. And now we're in a pickle because think of all the businesses that were enabled from fast, free, unfettered internet connectivity. Mm-hmm. I could argue that Facebook and Google would be nowhere if we live, would not have evolved if
100%.
We lived in a non-net neutral world.
That's 100% true, yeah. Yeah, it'll basically kill innovation for small startups that don't have some bank behind them.
Okay, well, as of today, I don't make this up, friends. I just report it as I see it. As of today, consumers have 90 days to leave comment on the proposal. However, because of a procedural quirk at the FCC will not be considering any comments on the issue of net neutrality that are submitted over the next week. So, if anybody is a fan of John Oliver, this is the easiest way. You got to get slacktivism can save us. It saved us before. It may well save us again.
Yes.
The world really is at your fingertips, friends. And a really easy website to remember, a really easy URL if you want to register your opinion with the FCC, was put up by John Oliver, host of Last Week Tonight. It's gofccyourself.com. gofccyourself.com. If you go there right now, you will not be able to put a comment up. But if you go to the FCC website, you also will not be able to put a comment up. GoFCCYourself takes you directly to the comment form on the FCC website, which apparently is very well hidden because they don't want to hear you.
It is very well hidden. You can't reach it on mobile.
Okay.
I tried. You can't get to it on mobile.
You will be able to through GoFCCYourself, except you can't right now because the FCC doesn't want to take your comments, and they've found a way to shut it down for the next 7 days.
You know why? Because when John Oliver sent those comments through, right now there's 1.6 million comments sitting there.
Oh, and they just haven't filled in enough slots in the bureaucracy to have somebody read them, or they can't find people who are illiterate and still share their ideology?
No, they just want to shut down the number of comments that'll come through. Those 1.6 million are from a few weeks of people making comments, especially from John Oliver's show. If those people don't all come back and remake the comments, they don't count.
Oh, you're kidding. Really?
No. The other thing people have to be very aware of is you'll see petitions go around, and those are great, and sign those. But if you don't go to the FCC site and make a public comment, they do not read it. The other thing I would suggest is letting your senators know you're not happy with this. And yeah, it's really easy. There's something called ResistBot. You just text 50409, text resist to 50409, and it'll prompt you through sending to your senators anything you want to say about this. And it makes a letter, and it faxes it, and they'll even actually postal mail it as well.
Okay, friends, I know this isn't the most interesting subject in the world. It's, how the web is regulated, woohoo. But I'm telling you, if you're listening to this podcast because you're an internet marketer and you want to learn more about internet marketing, this is your issue. It's important to you. the environment you work in will be irrevocably changed if they remove net neutrality protections. And I honestly, I don't know the repercussions of that. I can speculate on what might happen.
Yeah.
But really, it will be different. I know that much.
Well, and the other thing, too, is once the ISPs start getting money and by tiering the internet, right, they're not going to let go of that. So,
indeed.
Yeah. So once this is done, it's going to be done.
Okay. Speaking of getting money by having tiered comments, it's time for us to take a break here on Webcology. Now we really have to do this because you know the airwaves don't come free. So on behalf of Christine Schackinger from the Vetters and Site Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. Stick around. We're coming back with an interview with Marty Weintraub in just a moment.
Sit tight and don't move. Webcology. We'll be back after this short break.
How much are your best ideas worth? PriorThings.com gives you an added layer of protection for all of your intellectual property, ideas, and creative things. New business idea, pitch deck, PowerPoint presentation, song lyrics, source code, killer blog posts. We help you protect it all. How do we do it? We use the same technology platform that secures transactions for Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. Learn more at PriorThings.com. Check out exclusive listener pricing for Cranberry Radio listeners by going to bit.ly/FounderCircle.
Is your website hacked? Is your website displaying error messages or loading slowly? Even if there are no signs of malicious activity, your site may still be compromised. Websites, like cars, require regular maintenance to perform at their best and not leave you stranded. At Fjorge, our website maintenance experts can help you assess which one of our maintenance plans will best support your needs. Visit fjorgedigital.com or call 612-877-3840 and get the support and protection your website and business deserve. That's fjorgedigital.com.
Pick out some new favorite podcasts now at cranberry.fm.
Webcology takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Webcology here at Cranberry.fm. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, joined today by Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls and the Vetters. It is the 18th of May. And you might notice the Chris Cornell music playing in our ins and outs. It's a sad day. It's now come out that Chris Cornell committed suicide. He was found in his Detroit hotel room hanging while during a sound work. Anyhow, long and the short of it is we're trying to commemorate Chris Cornell through his music on the ins and outs. So I promised you guys just before going to break, we had a interview with Marty Weintraub, and here at Webcology, we keep our promises. We are going to deliver. Dave Davies, a couple weeks ago, was at a conference in Seattle where he got to meet Marty. And, Brasco, we have that interview queued up, don't we? Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, the incomparable Marty Weintraub.
Conversions happen before people even get to your website and after they leave your website. So if you don't understand the user intent of why people are coming to the website in the first place, you're not going to have great advertising. And on the back end, if they've come to your site and you're sending terrible follow-up emails that aren't conversion-oriented, you're turning people off. We've all gotten these emails. They say things like, I wanted to follow up with you. Really? Who are you and why the hell do I care that you wanted to follow up with me? How about thank you for your time today and we discussed this. It occurred to me we should have also discussed this and this, which you might find interesting because our other clients really told it, you know, something along those lines where it's extra interest. Testing is great. We're big proponents. But you can't make it all a CRO.
Now, you brought up something that's sort of near and dear to me. You're right early on in that. And it's a challenge for, I think, everybody, where you talked about sort of testing. Yeah, that's great, which we all know that it is, and it's all important. But that it might not tell you new technologies you might want to use, and that sort of thing. We're all locked in our own box. Where do we go for these fresh ideas on things we might not think about in our quest for tests?
Well, if we're talking about technologies to start with, then one of the best things to do is to come to a conference like this, the Conversion Conference, because in addition to the speakers, and don't get me wrong, we have outstanding speakers here talking about all sorts of new tips and techniques, but the networking events where you're meeting with your peers from other companies, the cross-sharing of information really is so invaluable, might even be more invaluable than some of the sessions themselves, because these are your peers who have done something similar to what you've done and maybe have a unique twist on it or tried a new technology. There's always something new out there. Recently we heard, for example, about a technology that grabs your IP address and then has like an 85% chance off of your IP address, if it's a home IP address, to be able to drop a piece of mail directly to your house. So imagine if you were on a site that was selling high-end barbecues or lead generation for insurance or something consumer-oriented, and they don't tell you who they are because they were anonymous and they leave, and you know they were on, let's say, these five specific pages, and you drop a piece of mail that goes to their house, and you don't want to be creepy about it, but if they get a piece of mail that kind of says, are interested in insurance or barbecue grills or whatever the thing is you're selling, that is a conversion technology to get them to come back, because otherwise, those might be lost opportunities for you.
Well, you bring up a good point, and actually, you mentioned the people and that you just meet in the network events, you mentioned the sessions, which are obviously great, and I know I met a bunch of the people in the exhibit hall. I was actually learning quite a bit about some things I didn't know were being produced yet, and some great personalization people and showing in the exhibit hall and stuff. So great conference for that too. For our listeners who might be thinking about going next year, but we'll talk about that a little bit later here. So what else? I mean, you covered a lot of ground on the different mistakes that people need to avoid. Can you give us any other hints or tips on what are some things that you just commonly see that you've been telling people and in your session told people you really need to not do this or avoid this?
Well, I'm going to go back to testing just for one more moment. There's an element of testing that always worries us when people talk about testing velocity. Testing velocity is not a thing, okay? People think it's a thing. It's not. It's just a bad idea. Because if you're focused on how quickly and how many tests can I run through, then you're not taking the time to put together tests that are well thought out, that have more of a chance of winning. As a matter of fact, there are statistics out there that say if you've got an A-B test, you've got a 1 in 4 chance of winning. But the more variations you have, and again, assuming you've got the right traffic, the higher the chance of the test having a winning variation. Further, is if you've got lines of code in there, if you've got less than 50 lines of code, again, you've got like a 1 in 4 chance. If you've got a couple hundred lines of code, it means you've really thought this through. And those tests that have, let's call it seven or more variations, a couple hundred lines of code, the more thought out tests, the ones that are much more strategic, those can win 70 to 80% of the time. But people don't do that. They're so worried about, oh my God, I'm measured on the number of tests I can get through, and I hope I get a little lift off of this next test. Testing velocity, if it is a thing, It's a bad thing, Dave.
So in that case, you're thinking of an individual test. You know, when I think of a test, I'm like, well, if I'm running seven variations, I'm running seven tests. Whereas in the way you're thinking about it, the person saying I'm running an A-B test, I can run seven of those and get, quote unquote, more testing done, but actually get less data from it.
Well, what happens is when you're running a test with all these different variations, you're able to test different elements. And then while not everyone can do, you know, let's say a multivariate test where it's truly, you need a lot of volume for that and it can be a little complicated. But if you're doing something where you can run multiple variations of the same page all at the same time and split your traffic across those different variations, trends will start to appear. And once you have those trends, you can then narrow down the test later on and figure out, oh, I've got two that are winners, but this other one was kind of a winner. What do I need to do to maybe tweak it even further? So you might do a follow-on test off of it. But just having, you know, let me test this page versus a challenger, it either wins or loses. It doesn't really tell you enough. But if you have some number of variations, that tells you a ton. And here's one of the things it tells you. If you have a bunch of variations and nothing wins, that tells you that you never have to test in that area again, practically, because those pages are something no one cares about. On the other hand, and Dave, you're laughing at me, but I'm serious. So on the other side, if you run a test, and people are horrified by this idea, but if you run a test and your test completely tanks off of your control, that is actually great news. Because what that tells you is people really care about that page. So maybe what you put up wasn't the right answer, but that's where you need to dig in and really understand that page better, because that's an important page. And of course, we all love the test where it just explodes and you get a great win. But you learn something valuable, whether a test is inconclusive, a big win, or a massive failure. And people make the mistake of thinking that the only tests that matter are the ones that win.
So now how do you, a challenge that I know I've had, and I'm sure a lot of people have, and you guys are experts at figuring this out, is where do I even start? I love my site, right? I know my way around my site. I have no problem getting there. My baby can never be ugly. Mm-hmm. How do you begin to start to think about what are you testing? Like if I'm going in there as a marketer going, okay, I need to test, how do I know what I should be testing, or how can I think outside the box and actually start to figure out something we've never thought of before?
One of the ways you can do that is you can use a user panel, somewhere like usertesting.com, and have some people go through your site and have an open mind, because they're going to be surprised about different things on your site. And whenever you get somebody going, I'm not sure about that, that's an area that you need to potentially look at to test. You're used to your own site. You expect certain things to happen. Years ago, I was a computer programmer, and I was told by my boss that I was not a good programmer, and that I had been there about a month or two. And I said, what do you mean? I wrote this program in a day. I said, I'm very good at this. He says, I bet you I can break it in 5 minutes. I said, no, you can't. He put his hand on the keyboard, just pressed a bunch of keys, and the thing blew up. I said, well, people aren't going to do that. He goes, yes, they are. He says, you can't assume that just because you wrote it a certain way, that's what people want to do. Well, it's the same thing is true in CRO. Just because you've created your website in a certain way, it doesn't mean that's how people are wanting to use it. That's why those user panels are very helpful, because they tell you how people really think.
Do people, just an opinion question on this angle, but are people fairly predictable once you learn to think about things like that? Like once you go, okay, people are going to do erratic things, can we start to predict what they will do to create sort of foolproof models, to create that software so it won't break, to create tests that are consistent even when our users might not be? Is there a consistency in the chaos?
I guess my answer to that would probably be no. I mean, people are unpredictable, and so you just never know. And frankly, I've never met the perfect developer, and I prided myself on being pretty good. The reality is we always miss things. That's why you want to have constant iterations to always improve. That's why testing and CRO is an ongoing effort. So just because you run the user panel, just because you run the test and you've got wins and you've fixed it, that doesn't mean you never go back to that page and test it again. First off, you might have improved it, but you might not have improved it all the way it could be improved. Second, the world changes. And when the world changes, everything from the economics in the world to political uncertainty, people have different feelings. They're happy, they're worried, they're, you know, who knows what their moods are in general. You have a new competitor that you didn't have before. There's new types of standards for websites, you know, mobile responsive, whatever it is. You've got to keep testing. You've got to go back every once in a while and say, is this still good or not? So nothing's ever perfect, Dave.
Now, you said every once in a while, which has to lead me to the question, and may change a bit niche by niche, but how often is every once in a while? How often should people be revisiting, putting fresh eyes, going to user testing, sending some people through? How often does this have to happen?
Well, there's a couple answers to that. Redesigning a site should probably happen every two, depending upon your niche, maybe 5 years, but no longer than that. But 2 years is absolutely reasonable to do a redesign, some type of rescanning. It may not be a complete redesign, but that's nothing unreasonable with that. However, you should be looking at your pages and your website, frankly, every month. You should be looking at your numbers and your analytics. You should be figuring out, is something changing or not? And you should be running these user testing panels. You should be using heat mapping tools like InspectLit or Lucky Orange or ClickTail and seeing the patterns. Are the patterns changing? All right, because otherwise, you wind up on a site, you're fat, dumb, and happy, and you're hoping for the best, and you have no idea. We had a client approach us. They were concerned about the conversion rate because their revenue was down. When I dug into their analytics, it turned out that their conversion rate had been dropping for 5 years, and they had no idea because their average order value was going up and their traffic was going up, so their revenue was going up, and all of a sudden when they couldn't get more traffic and the average order value, the conversion rate continued to drop, they started to worry. But the problem didn't happen last month. The problem started 5 years ago, and they weren't paying attention.
Now, so let's say I notice, because it's a pretty easy stat to get if you've got your analytics set up, right? I notice that my conversion rates are dropping. Is there a first point, and there usually is in most things, where would you first go to figure out what the hell's going on?
Well, here's the bigger problem, Dave. And I can't tell you how many people come to us, and they don't have the analytics set up correctly, or if they do have the analytics set up, they don't look at it. There have been so many times where we've got a new client coming on board, they're just dissatisfied. We ask about their analytics, we look at it, and it is a complete and total mess. They're not measuring correctly, they don't have it set up, they don't have funnels, they don't have, if they're an e-commerce site, they don't have that set up. You would think that this is all common sense. People just don't do it. Now, there's a lot of people who will be listening to this and say, well, that's not me. I promise you, even if you think you've got your analytics set up, have somebody outside take a look at it and make sure that what you think you're measuring is actually being measured correctly. Again, we've seen really sophisticated companies who had really good analytics that they were proud of, and when we dug in, we found out, oops, they really didn't have the right numbers.
So now what do you guys do about that? Like, let's just go, okay, now I'm convinced I need help. And I'm kind of, I don't know if my analytics is good. I don't know what it is. What do you guys do to help me as I'm trying to muddle my way through here?
Well, the first step in any of our processes is we do a complete analysis of all of your different touch points. We look to see, where your visitors are coming from, what's happening on your website. If you've got phone support, what happens when someone calls? If you've got chat, what happens when you chat? What follow-up emails do you get? What happens when they buy a product? Can you return a product or subscribe? How do you cancel? So we look at all the various touch points in the journey, including the analytics. And this takes us a couple months to do. You were talking a little bit about ugly baby and no one wants to admit their baby's ugly. Well, this is a painful experience for a lot of people, but at the end of it, we give them a roadmap that says, here's what you need to do in which order. In a lot of instances, one of the first things can be, we need to work on the analytics. But in other instances, it might not be the analytics. It might be, oh my God, when people call into your phone support, they want to hang themselves afterwards. You've got the most depressing people on the face of the planet. I'm joking, but this has happened. So step one is really figuring out what's broken. Step two is putting a roadmap together of both strategic and tactical initiatives. You work on the tactical stuff first to get the quick fixes, and then you work on the strategic elements to really boost the economic value for the company.
No, I know I've got another line of questioning, but I could carry this one for probably hours longer. But for our listeners and for your sake, because you know, you're from Sightseers and this is your conference, I don't want to tie you up all afternoon. Where can someone go to keep up with what you're telling me now? Like, does Sightseers, I follow you on Twitter, so I know the answer to this question already. but what properties, where can people sort of keep up and get these kind of tips and sort of maybe look at what they're doing and then get some fresh ideas that way?
Well, people can absolutely follow us at sightseers.com on our main website. They can also follow us on the conversionconference.com. And in addition to that, we have people calling us and asking for our opinions fairly often. We're happy to lend a helping hand, as long as it just doesn't get out of hand, so to speak. Having said that, the Conversion Conference, this is the last one we're going to have in the U.S. this year, or forever, actually. We're rebranding the Conversion Conference and expanding it into Digital Growth Unleashed. You can still go to the conversionconference.com website for information. We're going to be changing that over very shortly. But we're expanding it to cover more aspects of conversion. Today, Conversion Conference is mostly about what happens on your site. In the future, it's going to be about what happens before they get to your site. How do you pre-convert those people? What about the traffic up front? What happens on your site? And then third, what happens after you leave the site? So those are three different tracks. The before the site, on the site, and after the site from a conversion standpoint.
Okay, friends. About that interview, Frasco's got something he wants to say to you.
Okay, so the little context, this was from Conversion Conference Las Vegas back in April. And there were two Martys that spoke at the event. One of them is who we all well know and love, Marty Weintraub from AimClear. I was wrong on which Marty it was. It was actually Marty Greif, Executive VP of Sightseers. That's who Dave spoke to on this interview. Again, my apologies.
Okay, and just a bit of context here. Sightseers is Tim Ash's company. Tim Ash is the fellow who organizes Conversion Conference.
Which, by the way, we're having a future episode of PPC Rockstars that Tim is on, and he talks about that change that Marty just mentioned there, that they're going to rename the show from Conversion Conference to Digital Marketing Unleashed.
Excellent. Excellent. And you know what? Even if he didn't have that announcement about the change in branding and stuff, Tim Ash is a guy you want to listen to. When Tim speaks, you want to sit and listen. Okay, we got to take another break here on Webcology on Cranberry.fm. It's the 18th of May, 2017. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. And Christine Schackinger from The Betters and Sites Without Walls. Stick around. We're back after these messages.
Sit tight and don't move. Webcology. We'll be back after this short break. Looking for a white label SEO and social platform for your clients? Think eBrands. Free and unlimited SEO audit reports. eBrands. Premium Facebook apps and welcome page creators. eBrands. Twitter management app, analytics, and mobile site generators. eBrands. Let eBrands manage your search and social media campaigns and give you and your clients access to their white label dashboard, which have great reports that will wow your clients and deliver great ROI and results. Try eBrands for 30 days. Go to eBrandsWithAZ.com or call 1-866-625-5717. That's eBrands with a Z for eBrands.
Do you look at the task of ranking your site at the top of the search engines like you would climbing the top of Mount Everest? It doesn't have to be. TopSEOs.com knows how hard that climb can be, and they can make top ranking a reality. TopSEOs sends you to only the right search vendors and agencies that they know will work for you. Since 2002, TopSEOs.com has reviewed and researched the best search engine marketing agencies and solutions providers. Don't risk the cost of falling off the proverbial peak of search rankings. Let TopSEOs give you peace of mind. TopSEOs.com, the independent authority on search vendors.
Where affiliate marketing gets its buzz and mobile has its presence. Cranberry Radio, online anytime at cranberry.fm.
System on the internet. Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Webcology here on Cranberry.fm. This is Jim Hedger for Digital Always Media, and I'm joined by Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls and The Betters. Christine, I don't know if you saw in Search Engine Journal the other day, your friend and mine, Tony Wright. Yesterday, you saw the bad SEO information, too easy to find and impossible to escape.
I did.
He's right. It's just so much out there, right? What do you think?
Oh, I think there's a lot of bad info, just like there's a lot of bad providers out there.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, like, you want to tell people how to avoid bad info, but it's so pervasive. And even in the mainstream journals, and, you know, Search Engine Journal, sometimes Search Engine Land, sometimes the SEM Post, the clunkers get through, right?
Yeah, there's one author I know who writes for Forbes, Search Engine Land, Search Engine Watch, another one I can't think of, and he's almost always wrong. Mm-hmm. And I'm not really sure why he's still writing. I won't call him out by name. Everyone in the industry knows who I'm talking about, but yeah, it's kind of surprising how that happens sometimes.
Now, we can't tell you where to go to avoid, or where not to go to avoid bad information, but there are some things we can tell you that would be like, you know, hallmarks of crappy SEO information. And honestly, Christine and I haven't talked about this ahead of time. I'm putting her on the spot right now, and I'm putting myself on the spot too. I'll go first.
Okay.
Information that, If you're reading something and it sounds like doing this procedure is going to be a magic bullet for search rankings, it's probably not.
Probably true.
Okay, your turn.
I would agree with that. Also, if it's the latest set of buzzwords, like for a while there, you know, content was everything and nothing else mattered. It's like, well, content's really important, but other things matter too. I think any time someone talks in absolutes when it comes to SEO, can be pretty sure that that is not a very accurate article, because no matter what in SEO works, there will be a use case where it doesn't, and vice versa.
Well, that pretty much covers the gamut for everything else I might have said, doesn't it? But you're absolutely right. If somebody says something in absolutes in this industry, or if they don't couch it in phrases like, it tends to do this.
Right.
Then they're probably pulling it out of their hat.
They are, because it's just not, yeah, there's always an edge case, a different use case. Some verticals it works for, some it doesn't. So it definitely should have specifics. And they definitely should be citing references to things that maybe Google has said, possibly.
Okay. You know? Although, as Gary Ease himself said last week, sometimes if Google's saying it, it too might be bad SEO advice.
Well, no, that's really true. And one caveat, love John Mueller. He's such a nice guy, but he speaks from the engineer point of view. So sometimes I've watched his hangout and he gives SEO advice and he forgot the SEO portion of that advice. So it's like, yes, engineering-wise, that's great advice. Unfortunately, SEO-wise, really bad advice. So
did you see John Mueller's hangout the other day from the Googleplex itself? He got a few SEOs to join him at the Googleplex, and they did an open hangout.
Yeah, Jennifer did one of those when we were at SMX West a month ago, month and a half ago.
Yeah.
So I guess they're doing that more often. They're being more open and friendly. But yeah, I think just, you know, if it sounds too good to be true, it's probably not. And if they blanket it to the entire internet, then it's probably not accurate either.
Well, speaking of too good to be true, this thing about Google doing, like, being more communicative. what do you think? Do you trust them? Does that suggest that something might be coming down the pipe that Google knows it's going to need to explain heavily to webmasters and SEOs?
I don't know, because there was one incident on Twitter where Gary said he'd only give information to 5 people, and then at the next conference he was much more open. So I don't know, maybe Google said maybe that's not a good idea. Because we told them that, you know, if you guys don't give us information, we're just going to fill in the blanks ourselves. So
what, like pulling the journalist, the old sleazy journalist trick? Well, you know, if you don't make a comment, we'll just have to fill in the blanks.
Well, yeah, but not even that way. You know how it works in the industry, right? If there's a movement on and everyone knows something happened last night, all the private groups are like, oh, it's this, oh, it's this, oh, it's this. And if Google doesn't confirm it or deny it, then we fill in those blanks best we can, right?
Indeed. So, I've often suggested that SEO is the world's largest knitting circle, the SEO community, because we sit and we gossip technique all day long, right?
It really is. It also makes it very cool.
Well, yeah, it does make it very cool.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. And this is who was it who pointed this out the other day? It might have been it was Alan Blywythe, actually. Audit man, Alan Blywythe. So there is this really right wing former Marine, and I of all the American services, I respect Marines big time. Jeremy Knopf. And him and I agree on like nothing. But we have an affinity with each other. Like, the dude's a brother. I really like Jeremy a lot, even though him and I agree on like nothing. And I'm sure we actually agree on a whole bunch more than nothing. But we're political exact opposites.
True.
And there's this amazing kinship in the SEO community, mostly because we exchange information so much. And Christine, we can't lollygag. I'm afraid we've run out of time.
Oh, wow.
We did a whole hour. Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls and the Vetters, thank you so much for sitting in at the last minute here on Webcology on Cranberry.fm.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Webcology on Cranberry on the 18th of May, 2017. Stick around the network. We have incredible content coming up after news, and Dave Davies and I will be here. Talk to you next week.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and their guests and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of Cranberry News Morning and Cranberry.fm. Rebroadcasts or retransmission of this content without proper consent is prohibited.